This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. I am very, very pleased to have our guest on the line joining us, David C. Corton, founder and president of the People-Centered Development Forum. Mr. Corton, thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Mike.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you on the air, sir. I first heard you speak at an International Forum on Globalization event in Berkeley a couple of years ago and have wanted to have you as a guest on the program since then. And luckily, it's worked out, and I'm very, very pleased. So thank you for being with us. Dr. David Corton has over 35 years of experience in preeminent business, academic, and international development, a Harvard MBA and PhD, and from Stanford University Graduate School of Business, lectured at universities, been involved in USAID and the Ford Foundation, and really has been in the middle of world development for a number of years. Dr. Corton, let me ask you a question. How does a Harvard MBA type Stanford graduate business school kind of guy who used to be with USAID find himself being the founder and president of the People-Centered Development Forum?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but basically I set out as a young graduate to bring the lessons and skills of Western capitalism to bear in ending poverty in the third world. And after some 30 years of working on that, became aware that somehow it just was not working, that you know, we had a few people who had access to all sorts of modern conveniences and goods and so forth, but for most people, things seemed to be getting more difficult, harder, more deprivation, more poverty. And so I set about to try to deconstruct our ideas about development and its institutions to figure out why that was happening and what might be the alternatives that would work better for people and the planet. So the People-Centered Development Forum was is an informal network of colleagues around the world who are all addressing that same kind of question.
One of the ways that you worked to deconstruct what was happening was a book that you wrote, When Corporations Ruled the World. Can you talk a little bit about that book and what people would be getting out of that if they were reading it at this moment?
Well, basically, it takes a look at how we've structured our institutions in the world, or restructured them to make our most important decisions about our priorities, about how we use the world's resources, about employment, and so forth. And it's really about the rise of the global corporation as the governing institution of the planet. And then drawing back on both, you know, my real-world experience, our current experience, and my business school education to understand the nature of the corporation as an institution and how, because of its nature being owned and controlled by the global financial markets, how those who work in corporations come under incredible pressure to ignore all human values other than short-term financial profits.
We're talking with David C. Corton, founder and president of the People-Centered Development Forum, also author of the books When Corporations Ruled the World and The Post-Corporate World, Life After Capitalism. Dr. Corton, let me ask you a question, because I know on a program such as mine, we talk a lot about corporate control of our political system, of our media. You know, we really talk a lot about this topic because I really do, and as I believe you would agree with me, is that we're really in, I think, a battle for the future here between developing a system that's going to work for people as compared to developing a system that's going to work for a few people at the very top of the heap.
I agree, absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about when we're talking about this process of corporate globalization, can you talk a little bit more about that to help our listeners understand what we're really talking about? Because I think it's important for people to understand that it's more than just, you know, buzzwords and phrases, that there's something really happening here. And I know that I've heard you describe it very, very well. If you could share some of your thoughts on this whole mm-hmm. process, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, part of what's happened is we've moved ahead with various trade agreements under NAFTA and GATT and World Trade Organization. You know, we've been removing the relevance of national borders. Now, what that really does is limits in considerable ways the ability of governments to set boundaries on corporations, to enforce antitrust, set meaningful regulations on working standards, the environment, and so forth. And so increasingly, the power of the corporation extends out beyond any kind of human accountability. Now, the other problem, of course, is that the financial system has also become integrated internationally, and we have less ability to regulate that. Now, in the midst of all of this, in the trade agreements, the organizations like the World Trade Organization are pretty much controlled by corporate interests. So what we find they're doing is kind of writing the constitution for the world, which is based on the premise not of of the sovereignty of the person, the living person, the citizen, but rather the ultimate rights and sovereignty of the corporation to go wherever it can reap the largest profits.
So what we wind up having is this sort of superstructure, if you will, that becomes the dominant lawmaking entity on the face of the earth, and so-called nation states become simply subservient to the interests of private multinationals.
Exactly. Since the corporations have so much control over our media, we're constantly hearing all these messages about how friendly they are to people and to the planet, and how this kind of expansion will lead to universal prosperity and so forth. But of course, that's all, you know, that's all public relations. It's the same stature as the claims that, your this dishwasher soap will make your dishes sparkle better. Well, it sounds good, but there's not much substance behind it, because the concern of the corporation is not with preserving the environment or with providing jobs, it is with making the maximum possible profit for its shareholders.
We're talking with David C. Corton, author of the books When Corporations Ruled the World and The Post-Corporate World, Life After Capitalism. Dr. Corton is also founder and president of the People-Centered Development Forum. Dr. Corton, you were talking at one point at the IFG event that I attended in Berkeley, and you were talking about one of the things I found to be tremendously interesting when you were talking about how corporations have become sort of these masters, if you will, at internalizing their profits but externalizing their costs, privatizing their profits but socializing their expenses. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I don't know if people really understand. I mean, we hear these folks all the time talking about, well, free enterprise and private business and all of that, but it really doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't work that way at all. I mean, what we begin to find is that these global corporations are massively inefficient and expensive organizations on society. If you're going to pay your CEOs an average of $10.6 million a year, where do you get that? it comes down to tax breaks, special tax breaks for corporations. It comes down to subsidies in all kinds of forms. Paul Hawken, who has looked at this very closely, put together figures and concluded that corporations in the United States actually pay less in taxes than they receive in direct subsidies. That means, you know, direct financial handouts. Right. Now, beyond that, of course, you know, much of what this economic globalization is about is allowing corporations to go out and find places where they can produce their goods at paying less than a living wage. And of course, if you're paying less than a living wage, you're depleting the human capital. You're creating all kinds of tension and breakdown in the community that has to support people on less than a living wage. So that's depleting your human and social capital. You have corporations putting out defective products that push health costs onto the community. They maintain unsafe working conditions when, again, the costs of making that up in terms of the health care involved usually fall on the community. And, of course, you have the full range of environmental costs from, subsidized mining and clear cutting to, you know, dumping of toxic substances. And one of my colleagues in Washington, D.C., Ralph Estes, who's written a book, Tyranny of the Bottom Line, has taken made an inventory of all the studies just in the United States on externalized corporate costs, and adds them up. That comes to roughly $2.7 trillion a year, just in the United States. Now that's a huge figure, and it begins to create some kind of sense of just how how inefficient, how costly these institutions are to society. We begin to realize that, the real nature of the corporation, it claims to be a wealth-producing institution, but in fact, it turns out that it is more a wealth-extracting institution.
We're talking with Dr. David C. Corton. Dr. Corton, are you ready to take a phone call?
Sure.
Yes, Doctor. I understand that NAFTA has a case pending right now that could undermine what you're speaking about, or correct what the wrongs that you have been talking about. It has to do with the gas additive MTBE, a Canadian refinery that produces MTBE is suing our federal government for $1 billion because we recognize it to be not what it was sold to be. It does not work. It creates, not only is it not working well in the engine to improve emission, but it's poisoning our waters. So won't this case affect this whole corporation against the sovereignty of a country and peoples to defend their water quality and so many other things? Thank you.
No, absolutely. That's I didn't quite understand the preface to the question, because, of course, that that sort of case totally confirms what I'm saying. And
right.
And of course, that that provision under NAFTA that allows a corporation to sue a government if it takes any regulatory action that the corporation considers would deprive it of profits is exactly what these trade agreements are about, to undermine the ability of governments to protect the public interest and force the society to simply bear the costs of a dangerous product, either that or to compensate the company for the profits it was not able to make by destroying our health. And, of course, it's a comparable case where the U.S. company sued the Canadian government
right.
on similar grounds and has been collecting unearned profits.
I believe that was the Ethel Corporation that sued Canada and, in fact, won under the NAFTA treaty. I believe that's correct, Dr. Corton.
Yes, I believe that's correct, too.
This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. We're talking with Dr. David C. Corton, founder and president of the People Centered Development Forum, and also author of the books When Corporations Ruled the World and The Post-Corporate World, Life After Capitalism. Dr. Corton, many people are familiar with NAFTA and GATT. There's another one that's coming down the pike, the MAI. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the MAI is... Well, it was being negotiated under the Organization for Economic Cooperative and Development, Cooperation and Development, based in Paris, which is essentially a club of the industrial nations. And the idea there was to extend some of these provisions of NAFTA beyond Canada, the United States, and Mexico to make them effective worldwide, essentially giving any investor the right to go and invest in any industry or activity in any country, and to enjoy the right to sue any government if they took some kind of action like we've just been talking about, of regulating a gasoline additive or putting in some rules about working conditions or whatever that force a corporation to move to a higher standard and make it more difficult to externalize their costs. Now, fortunately, because of the success of citizen organizing efforts, the negotiation on that in the OECD was stalled. But what we see is the same provisions they've been moving to bring them into the World Trade Organization and into other trade agreements. So it's far from dead. One of the interesting things about it, of course, is that the provisions in the MAI are so stark in terms of their undermining of democracy and undermining the rights and powers of local governments that we've had city councils and county commissioners and so forth all around the country voting to declare themselves MAI free zones. I believe there in California you have those resolutions passed by I think San Francisco and Oakland, and we've up here in the state of Washington, where I live, the Seattle City Council, the King County Council, the state capital in Olympia, the city there, have all passed anti-MAI resolutions. So there is an educational process taking place, and we're finding even Republicans and some of the conservative politicians at the local level say, hey, this is not consistent with our values. It's certainly not consistent with democracy or the principles of local control.
We're talking with Dr. David C. Corton, founder and president of the People-Centered Development Forum, also author of the book The Post-Corporate World, Life After Capitalism. Dr. Corton, you're talking about grassroots organizing and how it really is becoming tremendously, I think, effective in at least raising the level of the debate and educating about these issues. Can you talk about the People-Centered Development Forum? And then also, let's talk, if we will, about life after capitalism, the post-corporate world.
Well, actually, the People-Centered Development Forum is a informal international network. What I'd actually rather talk about is another group that I've helped to form and helped to lead called the Positive Futures Network.
Please do.
Which has more of a public program. We publish a journal called Yes, a Journal of Positive Futures. And the whole thing is built around the premise that simply standing against the damage, the harm that corporations are doing, is very terribly important, but it's also ultimately a losing strategy. It's sort of like when you're trying to defend a forest and you compromise so they cut down a little bit of it. Well, that's lost, and then we're then forced into another battle. So all our victories are temporary, and our losses tend to be permanent. So the premise of what we're doing is that we need to take the initiative to be proactive, to begin to come forward with real alternatives that begin to move us toward a world that that works for all and that recognizes our relationship to nature. So you know, we begin with the basic idea that our international rules and our economies need to be rooted in and accountable to real people and to the communities in which they live. So the you know, what we're doing is collecting stories and data that demonstrate that there really is a shift in consciousness taking place, a shift in how people think about the kind of community, the kind of world in which they want to live, and also news about all the kinds of initiatives that are taking place as people begin to reclaim their local economies, to create new kinds of business enterprises that are employee-owned, that are rooted in community and are hopefully profitable, but which are about a whole lot more than just simply extracting as much profit in the next few weeks as possible.
I'm looking at some statements about the book, The Post-Corporate World: Life After Capitalism, and these two in particular really strike me. It says here there's a deep chasm between the promises of the new capitalism and the reality of social breakdown, spiritual emptiness, and environmental destruction this economic system is leaving in its wake. And then, as I'm reading here, it says, capitalism is a pathology that commonly afflicts market economies in the absence of vigilant public oversight. Since the economy internal to a corporation is a planned economy, the current consolidation of economic control under a handful of global corporations is a victory for central planning, not the market economy.
Yeah, isn't that ironic?
It really is. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, basically, you take a very simple statistic that if you take a list of the world's largest economies by their GDP, gross domestic product, and then you take a list of the largest corporations by their sales, which is essentially a measure of the size of the economy they control, and you meld them together, you come out realizing that something on the order of 51 of the 100 largest economies in the world are economies that are internal to corporations. And a market economy is comprised of small enterprises that are competing against each other on price and quality and so forth in a local market. These, of course, are economies that are internal to these massive global corporations that are, in which central management is responsible for planning the activities, for setting transfer prices, for deciding where plants will go, who will be hired and fired, all for the purpose of maximizing short-term shareholder benefit. So what we end up with is a series of centrally planned economies, but without any pretense that they're being centrally planned for the benefit of the whole of society, but rather they're being centrally planned for the roughly 1% of the world's people that have some consequential participation in stock ownership.
We just have a few minutes left. What I'd like to ask you is that, we're working our way towards the WTO ministerial meeting in November, and I know I'm going to be there, and I believe you're going to be there.
Absolutely.
Too. What do our listeners do, the people who are out listening in the audience, who are, hearing what you're saying and saying, the way things are going really don't seem to be in the interest of the majority of human beings on the planet. What do we do to try and help steer this towards a more people-centered economy?
Well, we have to, first of all, we'd welcome all your listeners up here to Seattle to participate in the demonstrations and let our politicians know that they're way out of line with the values and understanding of their constituents, who believe that the democracy and community and the environment and decent working conditions are far more important than the so-called free trade. But I think we also have to organize, and I'm very excited by the extent to which many of the labor unions are mobilizing around these issues, and also we're seeing many of the religious organizations, the churches and so forth, that are looking at their roles in relation to these issues of economic justice and democracy. And I think this is terribly important because while you know we're limited in what we can do as individuals, the key is to get organized. And of course, our two of our important organized constituencies are the churches and the labor unions. But we also have to open ourselves up to real questions, to rethinking a lot of basic assumptions. And of course, my book, The Post-Corporate World, one of the most basic points it makes is that we need to recognize that when we talk about the publicly traded limited liability corporation, it's essentially a modern version of the British Crown corporations that were created to exploit their overseas colonies. And it's an institutional form that concentrates by its nature, concentrates economic power without accountability. And we need to, look at not just the question of regulating corporations, but actually getting rid of that pathological institutional form. And because there are a lot of other ways to organize business enterprises, including, with real worker ownership, community ownership, where the ownership, first of all, the much smaller in size, but also where the ownership resides in the hands of real stakeholders who have an interest beyond purely short-term financial profits. People like the workers, the managers, the community members, the customers, their suppliers, and so forth. We need to do some open ourselves up to some possibilities of a very different kind of economic system that looks, as you noted, looks more like a real market economy, which is comprised of smaller enterprises that internalize their costs, that are locally rooted, and that are responding to the demands, preferences, and wishes of their local consumers.
One way to do that would be for people to get more information about the Positive Futures Network, I would assume?
Absolutely. The website, if your people are on the web, is www.futurenet.org. Or you can call them at area code 206-842-0216.
And that phone number one more time?
Yeah, 206-842-0216.
Dr. David C. Corton, co-founder and board chair of the Positive Futures Network, founder and president of the People-Centered Development Forum, and author of the books When Corporations Ruled the World and The Post-Corporate World, Life After Capitalism. Thank you for being with us on the program today, and I look forward to seeing you in Seattle.
We'll be looking for you up here, and we'll go out and hold some banners together.
Sounds good. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. It's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you this edition of the program today. If you'd like more information about Full Logic Reverse, you can contact us via email, flr@jps.net, or by phone, 530-265-9462. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.